Good morning. So in the next 75 minutes, we are talking more about contact center and how actually Microsoft uses link and unified communications in our own contact center. So I'm actually speaking not alone here. So I will introduce my colleagues in a couple of seconds. Oops. So my name is Daniel Jonathan Velik. I'm a senior product marketing manager in the Link team for Link Enterprise. That includes CBP, contact center, custom development, and also what we can do within the cloud. And with me today on stage are actually three of my great colleagues. So Eric Bailey from MS Travel. Maybe you want to stand up. Hello, hello. John Beryl Levine and Matt Wilson from the Xbox team. John is actually from the MSIT team, so we will see some demos today, so you will see some live stuff that we're actually using within Microsoft, and also some custom development that we added on Link. So I think it's quite interesting actually to see how we reduce costs in terms of Link and unified communications in our contact center, and actually how the contact center and customer care works at Microsoft. So we'll talk a little bit and we'll give you a picture how we support actually you as our customers and also partners for all of our different products. So in terms of contact center, let me probably start with something funny. So we're talking about customer care, right? And so I worked the last 2 years in customer care at Microsoft and basically made the first steps with unified communications there. And I can tell you, of course, there are a lot of sometimes funny situations on, you know, how, you know, the technique works or how we route customers and partners, some little accidents, right? So I actually thought I'd bring some two of the videos as a good start here up and show you the worst case of customer care, okay? So.
Enjoy your flight, thanks. Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. We're only boarding rows 9 and above right now. You'll have to wait.
I'm in row 8.
Please step aside, sir.
It's just one row. Don't you think it's okay if I...
We'll call your row momentarily. Step aside, sir. Thank you for waiting. We'd like to continue boarding the aircraft now. We're now boarding all rows, please. All remaining rows. Hello. Enjoy your flight.
So another good example actually that I found. It's more in the IVR space.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm on it. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You're covered, Kevin.
Thanks, Melinda.
Wait, I have blah blah insurance, so person, come help.
Hey, Grandma. Then look who it is.
I see who it is.
6 callers ahead of us, Jimmy.
You're not helping.
Having insurance isn't the same as having...
So it's not advertising for the insurance, but I found it quite interesting because there is an IVR in place, right? And we're talking about, you know, call queues and waiting time and so on, right? So that's a topic for later as well. So for the next hour, right? So we want to talk about the evolution of contact center, how we're using actually Link and Skype, as I mentioned before, in our contact center. But also I want to show some real business cases, right? It's not only about innovation, which is a beautiful thing, but it's also about how can we reduce cost, how can we increase efficiency, how can we measure that, right? And what I will show you today is basically a real business case inside Microsoft on how we actually estimated cost saving and efficiency from legacy environment actually to so the migration process to Link and to a Skype-enabled contact center. And that's actually very interesting because think about Microsoft. Of course, we own Link, and it's our flagship in unified communications, or in universal communications now. But it's also that, you know, Microsoft is a huge company. It's one of the most complex customer support environments in the world. So I give you some numbers later, but of course, also Microsoft as a company, we're having legacy environments. We have legacy PBX environments. We're having around 15 different CRM applications inside the company, and they are associated tools, processes, workflows, call trees, and it's a very complex environment. So when I talk about a business case later, you will see actually to make it simpler reduces cost, and at the same time it makes usually customer happier because you get engaged the right person. And that's actually, for this we're having three great examples today, actually from the Xbox side, from MS Travel side, and also from the IT side. And of course, we want to talk about how can you duplicate this kind of stuff for your company, and how can you run probably link in your contact center or in your engagement or types of engagement with your customers. Okay, we're having a couple books here, actually too many, so I have to bring it up. There's a lot of information actually summarized in a book that we're having here. So for every question, we have actually a little prize for you. If you're interested, read more. There is a summary of the business case content and also of what you can do with Link actually in a book. And there's a special code, discount code, where you get 40% off if you want to order. And that's basically it. Okay. So the evolution of customer care. I'm pretty sure that every one of us had the experience to call actually a company, right, or call customer support and to hang in a waiting line, right? Press 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to get to the right service. And then afterwards, basically, you get asked, okay, who are you? How can we help you? What is the customer ID? And so on, right? So that's at Microsoft similar. We're having so many different businesses, and we are authenticating customers through so many different systems. And in past, of course, right, when we made an assessment of our process and how that works, how customers actually are happy, then we found out customers actually want to communicate, of course, with the right resource in the company as soon as possible. So no customer actually likes the IVR system, right? And no customer likes usually waiting times. And we thought about, okay, how can we increase the customer experience to engage every customer and every partner, and also our Microsoft employees, because also they need support sometimes, to the right resource inside the organization. And some of our support is actually crowdsourced, right? So it's basically you ask something in the community, or you call Microsoft, but we route you to one of our support certified partners, and a partner is taking care of the support. And how can we connect through maybe federation or some other mechanism the whole customer support organization in an easier way? So someone gets an Insta message here. Okay, I want to give you some numbers, right? So I talked about Microsoft before. So 88% of our traffic is actually phone traffic. So we're having around 48 million calls per month. You can see we're having IVR and online callback included here. So basically, we're having 8 billion minutes, right? So it's a huge environment. Only 8% today is basically chat-based support. And you can see here also some numbers, 4 million chat per month. Excuse me. And there's also email support, right? But it's actually something which is going back and more because most of the customers do want to have chat support or actually want to have phone support. So we asked actually inside the organization, how can we support with real-time communication, how we have Link today, this kind of environment, right? And what kind of customization or what kind of partner added-on tools that we're actually selling to our customers do we need in our own organization? Right? And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. To give you also some market data, right? So we drove actually market research with some of our customers and partners, right? And what you basically can see here is the first channel, so the first support channel that usually a customer is using is basically to call the call center. Of course, there's some information on the website. You have to find it, you have to read through. But basically, website or web support is a very important thing. But the call center is the first place where you call in where you want to have support, right? So and then you see also email and chat. And there's also letter support that I find really interesting. So there are customers that send you letters, OK? It happens, right? Mobile support and social support, of course. So another interesting number is basically that one of four channels, also one person actually uses 1 to 4 channels to get actually the right level of support or the right level of information. Excuse me. So that changes, actually. That changes if you have basically critical support, very complex support that you require, or actually personal support, right? Let me explain that. So you can see, for example, complex and non-complex issues, right? So if you call, for example, Microsoft and you have a very complex Windows Server issue, then it's basically the call center, right? You get routed to a specialist, you get actually routed to one of our experts, and that happens in different industries. So you can see in the wireless area, credit card support, healthcare support. For complex issues, we're going actually first of all in the call center, and then we're trying to find a resource. In non-complex issues, basically it changes, right? So the support information that you find, people or customers having more patience, they are taking more time in the web to find the right information, maybe to download a document or manual or whatever, right? And the banking space is different, because in the banking space, and a lot of our customers actually asking how can we use, of course, unified communication in the space as well, but the banking space is all about relationships, right? So how can I create a better relationship? And communication technology and support can help here as well, but in a different, slightly different. Okay, so what is today's experience, right? In our organization, we're having more than 100 different PBX solutions. I said before, more than 15, 16 different customer incident systems, so CRM systems. There are a lot of customized tools. There are more than 10,000 different tools in the organization that are customized on workflows, communication, some data that we're gathering in our databases, how we identify customers, partners, and so on. There's a huge routing environment at Microsoft, and that's actually interesting because we are also using sometimes competitive technology in the organization historically, and we're trying actually to migrate away to our own application because Link is capable for a lot of things in Skype as well, and you will see that. And with the time, if you think about 5 years ago, we were not there, but today we are there. So we actually, even in our own company, we are migrating more and more away actually to our own technology to use that in so many different spaces, in also in customer support. Okay, basically. One more thing that I want to bring up here, and that's basically market data, yeah? So if you think about customer support in your organization, that changes. So not only the technology part is important, it's also the generation of customers, the age of customers, the region, the culture, right? So coming from Western Europe, customer support is a little bit different there. When I was in Southeast Asia, customer support is very different there. And in the US, well, of course, there's telephony and web and some new engagement models, but the generation of technology is something that is very aligned to the generation of customers that requiring data. And what you can see here is basically in the 90s, there was basically when you see a customer, the customer calls in, all the knowledge, all the information is in the company, and then afterwards you get hopefully routed through the IVR system or through some technology to the right place where someone picks up the phone and communicates to you. But this is very old, and think about how often this is the standard support that actually our organizations are offering to our customers. But that changes, right, with social network, with the information that a customer already has in the web. The customer is really well informed. It's almost an expert in a product or in the solution. So if the customer actually calls Microsoft and, you know, if a customer has a question about Office and Windows or Office 365 or whatever, then customers are so well informed that they don't want to hear, okay, so did you turn on the machine? What is your version of Office, right? This is something that frustrates a customer. And when we're actually analyzing the satisfaction level of partners and customers, this is something that we see over the generations and over the last couple of years in customer care. So this is the reason why we also need to push technology, because the customers are changing. And the future will be very, very, very different. From our today's perspective, social networking, all the information that you see, and also the very young generation. And I had actually a conversation with one of my colleagues. So they're small kids, right, are already playing with tablets and, you know, with Skype and with a lot of things that they're growing up with. So the level of information, the level of communication, how we use technology changes. And that means if you purchase a product or a service in future, the expectation of support is a much different one. So you do want to talk to an expert, maybe in a community, maybe to another customer, maybe to another company, but you do not want to get routed average times of 7, 6, 9 times to get the right contact in the company. It's a very important thing. Okay, so with that, right, 4 different things that are important, and I just show you the slide here for a second. Actually, you can download the slides. There will be more information that we are covering in the notes section. So the availability of information is a very important thing. Think about it. If you think about your contact center, your customer engagement model, then availability of information, very important thing. That can be on a website. That can be through a communication channel. The next thing is, how easy is it for customers to access a resource in your organization? And this is actually the very beautiful area for unified communications, because this is where Link is. This is where Skype is. This is where we show you some examples later in how you actually can create this kind of access between customer and between your experts in the company. Okay, awareness and ability. That's another thing. So how many of you actually offering chat support to your customers? Please raise the hand if this is the case. Okay? Really, two? Three? Okay, that's Microsoft, yeah. I hope more, actually. So it's not only about communication. So what you can create with all the tools is also self-services, right? We have seen, and we will see that today, bots in Unified, also in Link, right? So you can ask a bot a question, for example, in a different language. We can translate it automatically to the agent. There are so many different possibilities on how you can create a much better and a much more exciting experience. So for example, in Xbox, what we're doing in one of our businesses is we're showing actually some videos about new games that are coming up in the market to some of the channels when a customer is waiting for the right agent on the Xbox side. Yeah, it's not advertising, but it's entertaining, right? Because we're talking about gamers, and we're giving them the right content in a waiting time. It's just one example. Okay, so to summarize it, right? We have a shift, right? From all the traditional things, all the traditional telephony, communication, more and more to a new engagement model. This is the message that I want to give you with, right? And think about that the generation of customers requiring a different support. So phone support is a very important thing, and we do not believe that it will go away. But chat support, self-services, maybe video support, kiosk support. You know, that will actually be more and more actually the standard service that your company probably has to offer. Okay. So now it gets interesting because I want to give you some examples. So we see that actually probably is a comparison of our support to some other big companies in the market. And I actually pick up here Salesforce, Google, Amazon, and Netflix. And I wanted to show you how their support looks like, right? Just that you get an impression what other companies in the size of Microsoft are doing. So basically Google, if you go to the Google website and you authenticate yourself, basically what they offer is a lot of different support, a lot of different channels of support, right? So basically the contact options are different per product. That's one thing that we learned. And it's actually interesting because in the customer support space, we're always looking around, okay, what is Apple doing? What is Google doing, right? Because very often you can see some, you know, some innovation, some new ideas, maybe some things that we already have, right? But it's very important to be also competitive in customer support, not only in the products and services space, because we do want to have our customers very satisfied. So we found out, okay, that a lot of different contact options, there's a sign-in required, so they have some form of authentication. If Salesforce.com, we also analyzed the support. We went through the support process. And basically, it's easy to find, actually, a phone number. There's no chat option. And there's no sign-in needed, right? So in some of the support portals, you need to authenticate. And a lot of customers are having, actually, trouble with that because the most common issue is, actually, a password reset. So if you're asking, actually, hey, you know, authenticate yourself, put in your password, and then afterwards giving support, that's for 70% of the customer already very frustrating, right? Because they do not have the password, right? Do not know the password. So Amazon as well, right? So we tested here through, and what actually Amazon offers is basically two different call options, a click to call or a scheduled call, right? So you can actually say, okay, you want to have a call back, but not today. You want to have it probably tomorrow, right? Very nice option for support. And Netflix does not have actually any phone support, but their chat support is really great, right? They can reconnect you, they know you, they can authenticate you, they can actually even tell you, for example, about upcoming services, upcoming movies, whatever, right? So they have a really great support, very comfortable. So let's have a look on what we changed and how we changed it. And you know, I remind you, the session name is how Microsoft uses Link and Contact Center. So I do want to bring some examples, of course. So at first, right? So you can see here Xbox. You can see a comparison about the different companies that we looked into. And you can see on the left side, at least from my side, the left side, you can see the support channels. So from phone number, chat, click to call, email, proactive chat. By the way, proactive chat is you go on a website, and then after a time, right, maybe after 5 seconds, a chat pops up and asks you, hey, I'm Joe, the support agent, how can I help you? In the worst case, they're trying to sell you something, but that's a different model. IVR callback or community support. Community support is a very beautiful thing. I don't want to talk too much about it because Matt will give you an example later. Okay, so one of the first examples was basically Office 365. And I think that sounds exciting because in Office 365, we are selling Link, we're selling Exchange and SharePoint. But you know, Office 365 is a huge environment. So there's a mixed mode basically of technology that we're using in this environment. And I promise actually that I'll come up with some examples. So why is it important? Think about that from a Microsoft perspective. Of course, we want to offer the best service to a great price. But overall, we're also having operational cost and hardware cost and cost for customer support and service. And we always have to match with the competition in the market, right? So we have to see, okay, how expensive is our support versus the Google support versus the support on Facebook? And you can see the range in the competitive area is basically between 10 cent and that should be, sorry, that should be 80 cent, between 10 and 80 cent US dollar in the market. So this is actually a kind of benchmark, right? And we said, okay, how efficient can we actually offer our support with all different products and services, partners, and the whole ecosystem behind in this kind of price level for us? So the cost for customer support per service for Office 365 is basically a multi-million US dollar business per month. And you can see here a split, right? This is just an example, but operational cost, hardware cost, and customer, so CSS is customer support, customer service and support, sorry. So 2.4 million US dollar per month. So we said, okay, Office 365, if we run no Avaya system, no Cisco system, no PBX system, no legacy stuff anymore, and we're going into a completely native support of Link and of Skype, right? So we bring in our own applications. So you can see here basically on the top the support stage, right? So you can see the initiation of support up to how we resolve cases. And then you can see basically the key areas, so self-service support, customer engagement, the time to escalation, basically, the time to resolution. So this is basically when an agent is connected to you, and we are working on the technical problem with you, and also the escalation of resolution. And the red numbers basically showing you the saving opportunity that we have just to bring in Link. I'm talking here about reducing processes, reducing waiting times, making the configuration simpler, bringing visual IVR. Instead of calling an IVR, you see a visual IVR on the website. You press your area of interest. You will see that later, by the way, live. And then we're routing you to an agent, to a bot, or even to a partner. So it's a very, very efficient thing. The time to resolution, to offer you chat, but also the ability that you share your screen, only the screen sharing in the customer support is an opportunity for us on 35 million US dollar, right? It's huge. So overall, the Office 365 opportunity to not only selling Link, but also using Link as contact center application is a 50 to 80 million US dollar business case. It's huge. Okay, so how does it look? Right, and that maybe gives you the first idea on, we will come later to examples how you can do it for your organization. But basically, you can see here the time. You can see some red buckets that are showing you the time saving. And then you can see basically how you're using it, right? And I have to say, so some things are custom developed on Link. In some areas, we run Link and Skype natively, or sometimes with internal applications that you will never see in the market. Sometimes we're using partner tools or partner applications. And you can see, for example, Clarity Connect, and Greg Races from Clarity sits behind. So if there are Clarity questions, we also have Clarity here. But basically what we're doing, we created the visual IVR interface. Customers actually will go to Office 365, they will actually click to one of the areas, they will get routed into a web chat, or you can engage with your own Link client or with the Link web app, and then engage you to the customer support. And basically, all the capabilities are available on any kind of device. And if you don't have Link as customer, or if the customer has issues with Link, then basically we pop up the web integration, so the Link web interface, and we're giving you all the options to provide and to get connected to the right agent inside the organization. And behind the scene, for this particular project, actually we're using one of our partner tools, which is Clarity. Okay, this is the business case. That's actually more if you download, if you're interested in how to build a business case, and I was that actually 2 years ago, it's always great if someone helps you. This is a template. So this is a template, okay? So we basically said, okay, those are the scenarios. Those are scenario one, two, and three. And based on the estimation of time savings and of savings that we're actually having on, let's say we are saving on Avaya systems, migrating away with Cisco, whatever, right? You actually basically have those kind of numbers then on the bottom, right? And this is basically our business case. Only for one portion of the Office 365 business where we run a pilot, it's already $13 million. And then we can prove it in execution, of course, right? It's maybe the same thing that you want to do in your organization. Okay, how does Link from an infrastructure perspective looks like if you go into customer care? So on the left side, you can see the types of engagement, right? There could be a website, there could be a click to call, click to connect option on a website. And you basically today have two different options. You have the Link web app, you have the Link client where you can connect, or of course you can even, you know, build a phone number. And if I dial the phone number, I'm actually connected to a Link-enabled contact center, maybe something that you heard from Clarity or CCOM or the other contact center partners in the market. And in future, there will be more natively because WebRTC will bring some changes, and we are working right now for the roadmap of Link to bring in natively all the communication capabilities in any type of browser. So customer care is a very interesting part, very interesting area for the next 2 years. And then behind you, you have your standard Link environment, maybe with a partner solution or some custom development. Okay, let me go forward. So here's some examples before I switch to my colleagues. So you will see here mics of advertising on how we did customer support or how did we improve the customer engagement there. You will see another example where we use persistent chat in Xbox, and then we have also telesales, which is basically we calling customers, we're trying to inform them about services, we're trying to sell, of course, something. It's not a bad thing. And we're doing that through Link and how we do that. Okay, so. One example, that's not customer care right now. This is more advertising. So advertising at Microsoft works basically like that. We have a lot of agencies. They are usually outsourced. Those agencies are calling customers. Customers can have a budget with the agency, and also with Microsoft, of course, in this case. And what we are doing in this case, we are asking you, okay, I'll take you as example, Matt. Matt with his pizza business, right? Let's say pizza business. So he wants to do some advertising. So he gives Microsoft $20,000, right? And we are running a campaign. We're putting you on Bing. We're running some ads actually somewhere, maybe in a Skype client, whatever, right? And we're charging him for that. And he has some budget. And he has an online tool where he can adjust the budget, pay in. It's a little bit like an online banking platform, right, for advertising. And we said, okay, so in order to communicate to those customers, how can we improve that? So what we basically did is we created an environment. Basically, our legacy environment connected to Link. We run the Link platform with 4 nines of SLA because it needs to run. It needs to be uptime. It needs to be up. We're running actually for this particular business, Clarity Connect. And basically, we have a call tree. So that means actually we're giving in an email, maybe in an advertising campaign, you will see just a phone number, right? And we're sending out this campaign. We'll say, hey, you can actually run advertising campaigns with Microsoft. So you see the email, you take the phone number, you call in, and then afterwards we engage you to an agent. And we show you all the BI and reporting to our supervisor and to the agent on how many calls in a waiting time. Also, of course, the integration with CRM where we can put in then afterwards the data, and we can authenticate you, know you, and run actually our business in a better way. So that's one example on how we actually improve. Instead of calling an IVR, pressing 4 different options, trying to get connected, the agent has to be there right now. We're actually routing through presence information in this case, through skills, so skill configuration, right? Different rule set. Switching to the Xbox business. For Xbox, there's no, so this is here actually a kind of internal support. So let's say you're calling Xbox, and you connect it to an agent. But you have a very complex issue maybe about a game, you know, an online game that doesn't work, right? So what happens is actually in one of our call centers, actually in the US, they're raising up a red flag. The agent raises up a red flag. And that means the supervisor ran basically to the agent and asked, okay, what kind of resource do you need? And then we're connecting human resources in the call center to resolve the issue for the customer. So what we did basically with Link, a very simple example, we came up with persistent chat. We created communities, chat rooms, and if you get connected now to one of the agents, then the agent itself gets connected into a community, can ask expert questions, and can resolve the time, as well resolve the issue, but with a reduced time. And the beautiful thing is, so that the average time to support a customer was 11.7 minutes. With persistent chat, we basically reduced it to 6.7 minutes, and the business case behind it was only for the start of the project around $200,000, so 182.460 per year. So only to bring in one channel, one option in Link that can actually change the whole business, right? Okay, last example, telesales. That's another thing, right? It's a growing business. So we actually engaging in China, basically with a lot of new calls and those new contact centers to agents, to customers, and we're trying to sell, of course, services. So in order to use Link and to use visual AVI interfaces, new types of engagement, chat options, click to connect options on a website, about 1,200 agents actually having a huge opportunity. It's actually a multi-million US dollar business because we can engage the customers faster, we can identify them, we can actually build opportunities where we can share the screen, share an application, share information with the customer, and so on, right? And there's also actually a beautiful extension to Link. So for example, if someone talks English or German, you can maybe hear my accent, so I usually talk German, right? Then we can translate automatically chat between agent, between customer, and between partner. So I can actually ask something in German, and the agent gets it in English actually on the screen. Very nice. And that actually works in 32 different languages. That's another add-on, another option that you have in Link. Okay. Let's go to the first example.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely. Okay, the question was actually talking about cost saving, but what is with client satisfaction, right? Yes, so we do measure this. So we're asking actually in terms of surveys or actually even with direct communication of our customers, okay, are you happy with the service? And usually what we're doing, right, so when we ran Link in the contact center the first time, we basically selected a couple of our customers and ran a kind of beta program with them, right? So they ask actually questions in chat or they actually call the support. And then we ask them, hey, is it better now with Link? Or are you more happy with the IVR? What was the experience? What can we improve? And so on. So satisfaction, I'm talking about cost saving, absolutely right. But satisfaction is the most important thing. Yeah. So I don't want to mix it up, right? If you talk about customer support and about IT inside Microsoft, of course, how can I save the cost is a very important thing for every organization. But how can I make my customers happy and be more innovative in the communication? That is actually the goal of all of our opportunities. Yeah? Yes, another question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Let me answer the question. Then I have to switch to the speaker in terms of the time. So the question was basically about the legal and compliance in terms of persistent chat that we integrated for Xbox. Yes, we did. So we have a legal department, so we checked everything from the legal side. Also in terms of encryption, how do we store data, where do we store data, do we associate customer data with line of business applications, yes, no, where is that stored? So there was actually a 2 weeks process where we checked everything. But you know, here's the thing, based on the encryption, the security that we can actually generate with the right design and Link, we actually got approval from a very hardcore legal environment of Microsoft that looks to every specific detail, right? So we went through that because it's very critical, right? We do not want to share any kind of customer data external, absolutely. So we trained also agents. That's a very important thing. We trained agents. We're observing agents. There's no possibility to make a screenshot or things like that, or credit card information in the chat. So we're actually really working through every particular detail here, and it's possible. Eric.
Hi, I'm Eric Bailey with Microsoft Travel. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about how we are using Link for our service right now with American Express. So first I'll tell you a little bit about how we're doing things different than most travel services. Now all of you in the room here, I know you've all flown in, so you're all familiar with this type of experience, whether you called or went online, or maybe even emailed an agent to get your booking. Well, so we obviously have to do that sort of work, but we're also working to transform the business travel experience through integrated traveler-centric solutions, really making it easier for you to travel and connecting it through familiar tools that you're used to using. We want to be leaders in the industry. We want to show people a new way to do things. We want to be trusted partners internally. And most importantly, we want effortless travel for our employees. We want a predictive, seamless, and intuitive travel experience across locations and devices. And what that means is you shouldn't have to go separately and look at how to get from the airport to the hotel to your meeting. All of this should be integrated. You should know how long it'll take. You should know how much it'll cost. You should know what traffic conditions are like without having to go to each of these separate things. Our program is in more than 80 countries right now. We do about 60,000 travelers and about $800 million in spend each year. So in fact, on a day like this, we have about 5,000 people traveling around the world. So it's a fairly significant program, and obviously we have customer support in about 65 countries right now. Not an ideal solution for a consistent service. So we're moving towards access through familiar tools, Outlook, Link, and SharePoint, things that you know, things that you work with on a day-to-day basis, going into Link call centers, and then moving to a single online booking tool. So I'll tell you a little bit. About a year and a half ago, we started sort of saying, how can we improve the experience? How can we get people away from really going into a call center that the person might not know anything about them? If you're calling into our Romania call center, they don't necessarily know anything about you. It's not dedicated to Microsoft. We want a better experience for people. So we engaged with MSIT and Clarity to really see what sort of a solution we could put together. One thing too, actually, we're sort of the opposite. One statistic that I'll drop on you. So from Daniel's perspective, he's looking at all those phone calls. We're only about 8% phone calls. It's about 25% is email, and then about 70% is online. So people actually doing their self-service. So just thought I'd walk you through a quick timeline here. October 15th is when we launched to a broad audience. So that was about 8 months after we really initiated with our proof of concept. And that's where we went to the US. We went to our largest market in our busiest time, and we moved all of our agents home as we were closing the office down. So I don't know if I'd recommend that, but the fact that we were able to get these agents to move from their standard phones over to Link and in a virtual environment literally during the busiest month of the year, I think is a pretty good example of how easy it is to transition people and to transition the agents. We went to the U.S. senior executives next. Once again, an indication of our confidence that we can get something done is when you go to your top pickiest people. We did Canada in December. January 14th launched UK and Ireland, and then we're going to Australia and New Zealand is our next phase here. Once we get that in place, we'll actually have a 24/7 call model. So we'll be able to have dedicated agents around the world. In fact, I'll do a very quick demo. Let's see. So right now, if I go into my phone, if I could hit the right button, I just open up Link, and I'm able to search for Microsoft Travel on here. So I just start typing in MST. MST. Now, I don't know if you can see this, but you can see there, so I've got the little green availability of MS Travel US.
In the contact list.
In the contact list. I call through. I'll put the speaker on.
Microsoft Travel.
So it's already, and I know by the voice of that that's one of our agents in the US. So it's already figured out.
Your call may be recorded for quality purposes.
So it's already figured out who I am, what country I'm calling from, and it's routed me into the right agent from that. Simply with a click. I didn't need to remember the phone number. I didn't need to remember anything. And so we're really working towards that on a global level. Some of the benefits that we see, so for employees, it's a simpler connection, right? One phone number. We used to have 7 phone numbers on each itinerary. So that's just in the US, we had 7 phone numbers. We had several hundred phone numbers around the world. We want it easier, too, the automatic identification. So right now, we're just identifying who the person is and what country they're in. But eventually, we'll be able to put your travel data in there. So if I would call right now, and they know that I've got a flight in 2.5 hours, they can treat me differently. Or we also, as we integrate email and chat, that they can treat those things differently based on who I am and when I'm calling. So, oh yeah? So So we right now are running Clarity in US and Dublin in two servers for redundancy, but it does all go through the same system. Yeah, I know you know more of the technical side of it, but.
Yeah. Oops. It's actually a data center, right? So we have one pool running actually in a high variable mode for the US. We created another high variable environment in Dublin, and actually we're planning for the next one in Southeast Asia. And in every one of those nodes, basically, we're running Clarity, high available, for our customer support and for the different businesses. Yeah. But the pool itself is a standard integration of Link with Edge, with Frontend, and so on. That's a good question. So
right now, that's what it is. Today, if you call from Europe, you'll go into a European agent. As soon as we get full follow the sun service, that if you called after hours in Europe, you might go to Australia or you might go to the US. Right now, those are actually going to an emergency travel service that's very expensive. We pay, you know, it's like $25 per call, even if you don't make a booking. And so we spend a lot of money on that, and that, as we go to a 24/7 model, will go away. Yeah?
Is there a location service on campus level, not a world level?
So I mean, that's something we're not identifying that now. We're just identifying the country. So yeah, you'll be able to do that. We could actually see, we know where you are, where you're going to. Some of the stuff we're working towards too is with Outlook integration. We're actually trying to find, you know, so that they wouldn't just know I was traveling, but that I was at this hotel now. So those are some of the things we're really working toward. And those are probably, you know, a couple years off still. But the possibility of integrating those things with your calendar and with your, you know, HR systems is all possible. The business, we get better improved service. We no longer need people to go in and work an eight-hour shift. They're all working virtually. We have a lot of things that happen in the travel industry. We have snowstorms, ice storms, ash clouds, all these other things where demand goes up and down very quickly. And you might say, I need all hands on deck from 8 p.m. till midnight tonight. But guess what? They don't need to drive in. They don't need to do all that. So it really adds a lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. They all have dedicated lines. We have everybody hardwired, no Bluetooth, no wireless. We've checked all the data connections to make sure they're running. And we went really high. We said 1.5 meg upload and download minimum. Mm-hmm. So, we're at 98% call satisfaction for customers since we switched over. Mm-hmm. So we've had very, very few call quality issues. Let's see, touched on most of those. This, I won't go through all this. This is just some of the details of all the numbers that we used to have and what the model looks like today. It's a much simpler single phone number. We're seeing cost savings. We were able to close a giant office that saves us almost $20,000 a month. A lot of benefits we've seen. So as we're saying, we're moving towards follow the sun and skills. So we'll actually be able to bring in multiple languages and things like that in single call centers. Changing the calls routed based on your need and history and language, which is what I was saying before, so we could actually see where you are in the travel process. And also going to multimodal communication. And this is one that I think it's that a call isn't necessarily urgent and an email isn't necessarily something that you can take your time to get back at. You could have a very urgent email, especially when you're traveling or in an airport. That might be the easiest way to get the message out. So we're really looking at integrating all three of those in the coming year. And then we're also looking for ways to use Link to connect with other Microsoft travelers on your flight. Like there's probably 40 people that are trying to make it to the same flight from this hotel that I am. We should figure out a way to connect to those people, get a van, share taxis, things like that. Or also connect with other Microsoft travelers in a city. So if we've got 50 people in Chicago and you've got the evening free, maybe it's like, hey, anybody want to go out to dinner? We're going, I'm going to Starbucks. Anybody want to grab a coffee? Something like that. Quickly, key learnings, consolidate ownership. We had a lot of PMs on the project across multiple companies and countries. So having single owners would be a great thing to do. Probably one on the technical, one on the business side. Trusting the agents, we found that they were surprisingly quick and easy to train. And then one thing that I would say that was a challenge, integrating traditional phone with Link. One thing that we found is that if you... that depending on how those calls were routing, whether they went through Dublin or Tukwila, which is Seattle, they would we had to route out to some of the Amex numbers. Well, if you route out to a 1-800 number from Dublin, it doesn't connect. It actually went to the security guard in the Dublin office. So little things like that we learned, that you know, you need to have the regular number, not the 1-800 number, for that sort of a connection on the back end. I think that's it. All right, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. So we do that with if you're doing an international call, you have to hit, I think it's a, you have to, what is it, IVR selection. So we wouldn't be able to predict that necessarily, but we would be able to predict if you're on a flight or if you're on a trip now, that you're going to have different needs than, say, if you haven't called in 6 months. All right.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Matt from Xbox. Going to talk to you today about my Ambassadors program. From a very fundamental standpoint, Ambassadors is a community volunteer program to help us support Xbox and Xbox Live. Oh, that's the wrong way.
Yeah. I can do it again if you want.
Yeah. So from a support standpoint, you know, the big thing is, if somebody has a problem, let's fix it. You know, at Xbox, we want to make sure that everybody's happy with their Xbox. Everybody loves Xbox Live. We took the approach with the Ambassadors program. We wanted to try and experiment. Let's see if we can open this up to people who are passionate about Xbox and see if they can help us out with our support. We started off calling it, you know, crowdsourcing, but that was not entirely correct. In crowdsourcing, what you're doing is you're taking a question and surfacing it to a lot of different people, aggregating the answers, and taking the highest selected answer and saying, hey, this is what it is. What we're actually doing is we're taking a question, surfacing out to a whole lot of different people, and the first person who actually says, hey, I know something about this, I'll take this conversation, we directly connect them right up to the ambassador or the customer, and it'll let them have a chat back and forth. We always stay in the middle so that, you know, we don't ever directly connect a customer to an ambassador. That lets us do things like filter out credit cards, social security numbers, emails, you know, all those things that people theoretically don't send across to IM but do anyways. And really, we wanted to build a way that our gamers could actually continue to get involved with Xbox and really kind of go full circle and help out other gamers. The customer support funnel, this is our target for the next year. This is how we want people to get things fixed. Right off the bat, if we build products that don't break, everybody's happy. You know, that's very little cost to me, and it's a significantly better experience to everybody else. Barring that, if things do break, we want them to break in such a way and have the information available to people that they can actually help themselves. You know, this is our support site, you know, going through the site and finding out, oh, I have a disk drive problem. Here's this information. If I turn it sideways and cycle it 3 times, then this will magically fix it, you know, that kind of stuff. If, barring that, we want to surface the option to, hey, you know, go ahead and try out our community option. This is my ambassador's program. Surface it out. Say you're connecting to a community member. This isn't a paid support agent. You know, these are just guys out there in the world who have volunteered that are trying to help you out here. And finally, barring that, we have our final people are the paid support, our agents in the call centers that are our total ninjas who are going to come in here and swoop in and fix everything that's anything that's broken. Obviously, the farther to the left of the funnel that people find their solution, the better it is for everybody. So right now, my ambassadors program, we have about 80,000 registered ambassadors. We've been live for 3 years or so. Of those 80,000, we consider 6,500 of them to be active. That's taking a chat in the last three months. We're getting, right now is a little bit of a low period, so we're getting 1,000 to 2,000 questions per day. Over holiday, like around Christmas, we were doing about 7,000 questions per day. And with a little bit of fuzzy math thrown in here, we're guesstimating that we're saving about $60,000 a month with this program in deflected calls that would have, you know, questions that are taken by ambassadors would have resulted into a call to our call center, and that's how we calculate our savings. So who are these guys? You know, why would they be doing this? First off, our ambassadors are just people out in the community. They're kids or adults, you know, that are passionate about Xbox. You know, they've come to us and said, you know, we're helping out on the forums, you know, the Xbox support forums, but this is too slow. is there any way that I can help out faster? Can I get more involved? So that's where we kind of thought up this, well, let's try an IM chat. And so we restarted the ambassadors program. This is also building up another way that these ambassadors themselves can really get involved with Xbox. You know, they have a direct line into us. You know, it's not a one-way street. We don't just shove stuff out to the ambassadors. They're giving us feedback back. You know, they're helping us identify. If we have a problem that we don't know about, they're helping us identify it sooner than waiting for a call center to notice that, oh, hey, we have a spike in error code X37001, you know. We're actually able to get faster feedback from our community members. And each one of these guys, they're doing this for, well, to get involved in the in Xbox, but also they get XP, experience points, which leads to the loot and level program. For each chat conversation that one of these guys take, they get awarded experience points based on how well they do. At the end of a conversation, we pop up a survey to the customer, and it says, how was this? Rate your ambassador, essentially a scale of 1 to 10. And based on that rating, the ambassador will receive 0 to 25 experience points. Experience points get aggregated to levels, and based off of levels, you get awards, which is going to be coming up next. So here's the general profile page. This person's done 30 chats and has a total of 1,130 experience points. They've done pretty good for it. We've got a couple other things that they can do to get experience points. As you go through this, you have a tenure, basically gate. Legal's come in and said that we can't award too much stuff per year, you know, so we have to throttle them a little bit. It's not just experience points based. But they start at level 1 and go 2, 3, up to, I think we have a maximum level of 15 right now. As you go up the levels, you unlock these loot tiers. At each tier, you can select what award you want. Some of the awards are sweepstakes tickets, which we'll get to in a second. You can unlock avatar items for your Xbox Live avatar. Some of the higher level ones are actually games. The ambassadors are able to unlock and download arcade games. The sweepstakes tickets. Every month, we have a sweepstakes drawing. When you submit tickets to this, you're essentially putting your name in the hat. At the end of the month, we pull a random name out of the hat, and that person wins whatever that month's award was. This is from January. January, we were giving Forza away. When we launched the program before the Xbox One, we actually gave out a couple of Xbox 360s. So there's a wide array of things that we give out each month. All right, so where does Link come in with this one? Before I go into this too far, we're going to roll back about 3 years when this program started. We originally had built ambassadors on MSN bots. I had one bot living in the cloud, and a bot, an MSN account, could only have about 1,000 contacts per contact list. So once my program grew to be more than 1,000 people, I had to scale out by adding more bots. So right when we rolled over to Link, we were running 12 bots in the cloud for, you know, about 12,000 people. When we did make the jump to Link, we were able to consolidate that all into one bot. You know, we have one megabot that's running everything, which has allowed us really to scale up to these 80,000 ambassadors that we have now. All of this is running on two application servers. That's my bot. And we're running two simply for failover. If one goes down, we want to make sure that we live, keep going on. The next big part of this is Pick Federation. This is how Link talks to Skype. We have a little bit of a weird setup because, you know, most typical Link installs have thousands and thousands of people. We have one person. That's my bot. Everybody else that I talk to is out in the public sector. You know, they're connecting to me through Skype. In Link, there's a limit to the number of people who can subscribe to the presence of an entity. In order to get around that, in order to scale out to the 80,000 people who could potentially be asking, is this person online? Is my bot online? We have a service that's running on our Edge server that inspects every message as it comes in. If it's a presence request, it automatically intercepts it, doesn't even let it hit Link, and automatically returns back online. And the last little bit of it, we do a little bit of unsolicited call. This lets the ambassadors from their Skype application talk to my bot and do things like set their delay preferences, which is essentially putting the bot on hold. It's telling the bot, you know what, I don't want to be, don't bother me for the next hour, 4 hours, whatever. All right, now I'll actually try to show this to you. Okay, so right here I have my Skype running with my UAT bot. We're doing this in UAT so that I can actually make sure that I get the questions. Right off the bat, I will show you the unsolicited call. I'm able to talk to my bot and set my delay preferences. This is where I'm going to tell the bot, you know what, I'm here, I'm ready to go. Give me a question as soon as it comes in. You know, I can do other things like, you know, don't bother me for 8 hours, I'm going to go to sleep, or I've got meetings, or anything like that. Then to simulate an actual customer, I'm going to run this from Visual Studio, because I'm a glutton for punishment, apparently. This is what the customer would see if they're coming in from the Contact Us support site. We have some legal stuff in the front that says, you know, these aren't Microsoft people. Don't give them your credit card. Don't give them your personal information, et cetera, et cetera. In order to get around legal, this is what we had to do to get this going. So we'll just put some stuff in here to ask a question. That is quite the question there. And now it's come to me down on my Skype. This has actually gone to my bot. My link bot has picked up this question and looked at its contact list of all the ambassadors who's online and sent it out to them. Like I said, I'm in preview, so I'm the only one here. I'll go ahead and take this question, and we can talk back and forth and have a conversation. The internet being the internet, one of the things that we've had to build into this, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term troll, but given the anonymity of the internet, people can be jerks. And we found that a lot of times people would come in through the Contact Us flow and just grief our ambassadors. And then they would rate them really low, which would negatively impact the average rating for the ambassadors. And we have a leaderboard for them, and it would knock them to the leaderboard. So what we did is we built in a couple keywords. One of them is hash troll. And what this is telling the bot is this is a not nice person. Disconnect the conversation. Don't even give them a chance to rate the conversation. We send out a message to the customer that says, you know what, please don't be a jerk. These guys are, you know, actually really nice guys. You know, they're just trying to help out. Then I'm going to set my delay pref, say, hey, give me a next question again. And one more quick here. I'll just ask another quick question. And then it comes back up. I'll take it. And then we'll be able to talk back and forth here again, and I'll just say, you know what, I fixed the problem. There we go. And so the next keyword, the next thing is once a customer or an ambassador types buy, that's telling the system that the conversation is done. This pops over to the ambassador, lets the ambassador choose when he wants his next question. I'll go ahead and say, you know what, I'm going to take an 8-hour break. Customer side, this is my survey to say how well did this ambassador perform. So I'll go back over here. Can you hit one? And what all makes this work? From the customer side, we have everybody coming in through the support.xbox.com into our chat page. When they actually type their question, it goes off to a service in the cloud that routes it out to our different channels. We have two channels. One is Link and one is the Ambassador Bank. The Link bot then takes that and looks at the ambassadors on its contact list, goes who's available, who's green, and who's actually has not set their delay preferences to be ignored, and then sends the question. We go through 5 people per minute to stay under a couple limits there. And then finally, just to wrap it up real quick, we're doing 1,000 to 2,000 conversations a day, peaking out at 7,000, with about 60 grand that we're saving per month with this program. And one of the things that we did find out throughout this whole program is that people who got their help through this community option actually had a higher satisfaction rating even when their problem wasn't fixed. You know, it was just the knowledge that this is somebody out there just trying to help that wasn't a paid agent, really it boosted their satisfaction. All of this is running off of two front ends, 2 edge, and 2 application servers. It could have been going off of 1. We're just putting it at 2 simply for the high reliability. And now I'm going to hand it off over here.
Hello, my name is John Burrell Levine, and I work in Microsoft IT. And I am going to show you how we've implemented Link in our internal call center. And the first thing I want to point out has to do with multitasking. So this is your brain. Let's see how many people get this. This is your brain on an IVR. You can judge how many people get it, because there used to be a commercial in the United States that was, this is your brain, and this is your brain on drugs, and it was an egg in a frying pan. And so I show this just to kind of point out the fact that people can't multitask, right? When you're on an IVR and you try to do anything else, I have a 7-year-old son, and it's inevitable when I'm on the phone talking to my bank or whoever it is, he's tugging on my leg, dad, 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 and I'm pressing the star button or the star key on my cell phone to get back to the beginning again. So I'm going to show you an example of Microsoft, right? This is Sally, and she works out somewhere in the world. And her experience before our link integration was that she picks up her phone, she dials a phone number, she gets into the IVR, she listens, hopefully she's able to pay attention, nobody comes into her office. We do 500,000. We do 500,000 calls a year, phone calls into the help desk. And we found that when you're in the IVR, it was about 63 seconds just in the IVR. So you can see how much a colossal waste of productivity that was for Microsoft employees. 873 business days. Now at Microsoft, our business days are 27 hours long, but we scaled it back and we talked about it in 9 hours. So this is Sally's new experience. Oh, sorry. So we built this, right? This is in the SDK. Some of you who saw Albert's presentation yesterday probably saw a less green version of this. All right, this was our first implementation. If you went through and you clicked on the tiles, you drilled down, delivered you straight into the pod at the help desk in our English-only call center. And then this is what Sally's experience is now. She opens up Link. She starts a conversation with our bot that I'm going to show you in a minute. And Sally now takes 11 seconds. Apparently the range on this thing's not great. Sally takes 11 seconds in the IVR. So that savings of 52 seconds resulted in savings of 720 productivity days a year for the business. Now, we do a fully amortized cost of a Microsoft employee somewhere around $100 an hour. So you can get an idea for the internal savings. Now, we're a cost center, so I don't get to actually book that revenue back to the company, unfortunately, although I am trying to work on convincing people that IT can be a profit center. We'll see how that goes. So this is what we built initially. Our second version. And I just kind of highlighted on here a couple of the key features. We have a tile implementation, and you drill through the tiles, you get to actions. We've expanded it beyond telephony, so you can do email. And right now our chat platform is outside of Link, is a legacy thing that we're currently actually migrating and building out something within Link. You can do self-service, so you see the quick links. Those self-service articles map back into the topics so that when you select a topic, those things change based on the topic you've selected. So I'm going to switch over now and actually demo what this looks like. Bear with me for a second while I unlock my machine. Actually, now's a great time. If anybody has any questions, I can try to multitask and unlock my machine and answer a question at the same time. Wish me luck. You're not allowed to ask me a question. Hold on, I'll get there in a second. It's number 3. So what I've done here, I've brought it up already just because I'm on a direct access connection and I want to make sure that in the interest of time, everything is fast. So you see my Link client, and we have a always-on presence in Link. And I double-click this and it opens up and I start a conversation by typing hi. We've actually named our bot SME, stands for Support Me Everywhere, Support My Environment, Subject Matter Expert, but that's the boring traditional way. So I'm going to show you a couple things real quick. I'm going to show you some of the tiles. Right? So I talked about before, you can drill through the tiles. So if I select collaboration, communication, and then I select email, and I go one step further into Outlook and OWA, what I'm provided now is the available support options for Outlook and OWA. And you know, I mentioned also before that we start showing you the get time back links that show the top call driver at any given moment. So now if I click phone support, it's actually going to call the, this is a test, just so we're clear. Calling help desk, there it goes. So it's gonna call the help desk now, and it's gonna call directly into the queue, as long as the audio's up over there. It's gonna call directly into the queue for Outlook. It is, I promise. I'll give it two more seconds. It might be because the first time I click, so there's an interesting thing in Link, right, to prevent sort of that denial of service type of thing. So I clicked the first time. If it didn't kick off the call right away, now I'm locked, right? I can't continue to make that call until there's a reset timeout. So trust me, it would dial in. Our supplier would say, hey, thanks for calling, right? Give us your name, and I'll show you what it'll look like on their end in a second. So what I talked about is the available support options. So our supplier that provides our call center on the other end, we outsource. So they're a traditional, they're actually on a PBX. So we're dropping into direct termination points within their IVR. And because we're using enterprise voice, right, not every country in the world, not every country is enabled with enterprise voice. There's actually countries that legally don't have media gateways installed that aren't owned by the government. And then some of our users who work from home or mobile aren't enterprise voice enabled also. So rather than provide the experience of you click it, you try to call, nothing happens, when you click it, you try to call, we actually provide you the phone number that says, hey, we can't do this scenario over enterprise voice. Here's the phone number you need to dial instead. And we do that because we know the location of the user. We're not using GeoLoc, but we actually have the data feed from our HR database. So we know where a user's office is. So we use that information to determine what numbers they should dial in that scenario. The other thing I should point out about that is we also do local language. We support 7 different languages in 8 different call centers around the globe. And because we know where you are, we know which call center to connect you with, and all the time of day of week settings are done within the telephony system. So that's different, because initially, if you were in France, you would pick up the phone, you would dial the French number, and that was limited to France. Now we've expanded it to, if you're in any place in the world where French is the primary language, then we know that, and you get to connect to the French support. So it's really given us an opportunity to expand what we're doing for local language. So the other thing I should point out on the tiles before I move into the natural language component, apparently lost one of my notes, is that, you know, we're trying not to have everybody think about support options and product names the same way that we think about it in IT. So when I show you that IVR structure, right, it's actually what I'm coining as a multiarchy, right? It's not a hierarchy. Any subtile can map to any other tile. And you can have a subtile that maps to multiple tiles. So if I think of Outlook not as email, but I think of Outlook as a Microsoft Office product, or I think of it differently, then you can map those subtiles to any different direction, and the support actions are all the same. So I'm going to show you really quickly, and Albert showed this. I don't know who was in Albert's demo yesterday, but we have also enabled a natural language interface to this. So if I come in here and I just start talking to our bot, right, I can now say I need help with Outlook. But darn it, typo. I spelled Outlock instead of Outlook. But it knows what I meant. Right? We actually are using some SQL functions that are native that go through and troll and figure out troll in a good way, not troll in a bad way, and figure out things that sound like other things, and then we get a report back out. So we see common typos, stuff like that, and we're able to continuously refresh the keyword list. So what you notice here is I get the same support options. So if I click here, I open a ticket into our ticketing system. If I want to make a call, I have to actively say that I want a call, and I type call, and it does the same thing. Which, as you saw before, is it doesn't, it turns out, connect me with my supplier on account of the fact that this is a demo, and demos never work perfectly. So we also added some fun over here, right? So I can ask it global thermonuclear war for everybody who saw thermonuclear. Yeah, I can't type and say war games at the same time. Anyway. Thermonuclear. This is way funnier if I get it the first time. It asks me if I want to play a nice game of chess. Likewise, if I ask it, where are you from? It will tell me where it's from. Turns out my bot is from, let me guess. Oh, man. He's not cooperating today. He is from, it's where were you born? Where were you born? He's from Botswana. Botswana, come on. Come on, Botswana. Anyway, so here's what the two other views I want to show you really quickly, right? Because I'm running low on time. It's yellow. I have 3 minutes and 6 seconds left. So we have an agent view that's built on top of this. I'm going to type some random stuff in here on purpose to key something up that, just bear with me, most people don't do this. Okay, we have an agent view, right? The agent view is also within Link. If I'm part of a security group, I get to see this. So our call center agents are actually looking at this view when you come in. We will always, from an entitlement perspective, even if we have a even if we have your alias, we will always ask you for it, right? That's how we do security and entitlement. And then we do a lookup. And then if you're doing something like a password reset, we'll ask you a few other questions to validate that. So in this case, I'm going to play the role of the agent and the user. So I get the call, and I type in my alias. And what you can see here are a couple things. You see the tickets I already have open. And now you'll see what I was looking for. And you'll notice a couple things about this. You notice the frustrometer in the top right-hand corner. The frustrometer picks up on the fact that I was context switching a lot, the fact that I was saying it was horrible, it was bad, it was dumb, all of these experiences. And now as the agent, I see the frustrometer. Okay, right, now I know, you know, I know a little bit more about how to interact with this person. And it's not that we're mean when you're not frustrated and nice when you are frustrated. The difference is we do some predictive stuff. So you see on the top it says I'm Enterprise Voice enabled. Well, if my password was going to expire within the next 10 days, it would also tell the agent that. So by doing that, we give the agent the opportunity to proactively prevent a ticket that the user might not ever know that they were going to need help with. Unfortunately, password resets are a significant call driver for us. So we actually eliminate tickets, we give time back to the user without them even knowing it, and we give time back to the agent because they can do everything within the context of one support call. The agent also sees the entire context of my conversation, so they have contextual information about the problem that I'm calling about, right, up front. So we also have a full Link contact card. So now, right, I'm on the phone, and I need to generate an email to this particular user. Right, I can use the Link contact card to do that. If I have, if I want to do a schedule a callback, we have the Link contact card available to do a schedule callback also. So all of these things are just completely native within. Get ready to push that mute button there in a second because I'm not done. All of these things are native for us within Link. So we also have an administrative view that I'm not going to spend any time in because I want to jump ahead on the slide deck really quickly. But in the administrative view, all of the components that drive the system on the back end can be managed. So I can add, right, new topics in here. I can drill through, if you notice, I can drill through my topic tree, and what you see is exactly the representation that was displayed on the UI. So all of this can be done by a set of agents. So quickly, because I know I'm running really low on time. I did the demo. Come on, go. Is that your slide? Anyway, that's not what I'm going to talk about. I'm talking about something different. The entire solution you just saw runs on our corporate Link infrastructure, right? We actually are using a single application server running IIS to host the Silverlight application. It's on a high availability SKU in the data center. So it's fully virtualized, everything. So the fact that it's running on a VM and a high availability, if the host happens to go down, there's lots of other stuff that's way more important to the company than us running on it. And then we have a single SQL database also on a high availability host in the back end that manages all of the configuration, tracks the conversation history, does all of those different components within Link. So our next, right, where we're heading next is enabling some chat experiences directly within Link so that we're moving away from our legacy chat implementation and doing stuff native. So that's all I have. That's not red. Does that mean I can keep talking? Because I will. Okay, last thing I'll point out. There's an architecture slide in here, and I'll do a shameless plug like Daniel. There's a technical case study, a business case study, and a Channel 9 video that are published out on the inner tubes. If you search for me by my name and on IT Showcase, you'll find all that information. So if anybody's looking for TCS or BCS, when they go talk to their customers or their partners, you can find it out there. Likewise, you can find the video. So thank you all for coming. I know this was a rough one, 9 a.m. day after the party. I really appreciate everybody being here. Thanks.
Thank you. So we didn't have time for the quiz, so what I would actually suggest, everyone that comes in front gets a small present, right? So hopefully everyone comes. And well, so you can download the content. There's more information actually in the notes section, as I said before. And if you're interested, then shoot us an email. More than happy to provide the email address if you have questions how you can integrate or how you can actually duplicate some of the scenarios for your business. More than welcome. Thank you very much for your attention, and hope to see you next time.